This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast is sponsored by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. Whether it's a trip to Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Adventures by Disney, or the Disney Cruises, the folks at MEI Mouse Fan Travel have your best interests at heart. They'll help you with your reservations, your planning. They're experts in all things Disney, and they love visiting Disney World themselves. They're big fans. Please visit them by clicking on the link on the Mickey Miles Podcast website or by visiting them at MEI-travel.com or MouseFanTravel.com.
Hi, this is Laura Wright from California, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 103 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and I'm from WDW Today. And with me on the show is Michelle Scribner-McLean. How are you doing, Michelle?
I'm doing great. I'm getting really excited about the Tower of Terror weekend. I use TripIt, and it keeps on popping up to tell me how many more days before we go to Tower of Terror. So I'm excited. And, Mike, did you realize that we have a meet planned?
Yes, we have a meet plan, and I believe it's at the Beach Club. Is that correct?
It is. It's at the Beach Club Solarium, which is right across from the gift shop. It's on Sunday, October 6, 2013, at 2 p.m. And right now we have about 10 people going, but hopefully more people will sign up. We realize that some people are flying out of town at that point, and I'll be flying out later in the day. But we are hoping to meet people, and if it's an intimate gathering of 10, that is okay too.
Sure.
But anyway, I have a shout out as usual.
Okay.
And that is to Doug Bowman. And I always love it, Mike, when people post, you know, what they're doing, what they're running, because I really think we're trying to build a running community where we're all supporting each other. Well, Doug Bowman did something really special. He did his first half marathon, and it wasn't a Disney half marathon, but it was a half marathon nonetheless, and he posted a picture of himself with his medal. So, Doug, I hope it's the first of many. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Doug. Well, we are continuing with our questions with Jeff Galloway, and without further ado, we're going to get right into those questions. And Michelle, why don't you continue with our questions?
Okay, thank you. The next question is from Katie Wolverton, and she asks, it's probably a little late for me to know the answer, but it can help future runners, assuming the dates for future races don't change drastically. How does a runner properly ease into the WDW full marathon training plan after completing the Disneyland half training plan? So this isn't a night question, but she wants to know, after Disneyland, how can you go to getting ready for the marathon at Disney World?
I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I can tell you that it's pretty simple to figure it out. Look at the Walt Disney World Marathon training schedule, and you know it's on the website, so you can chart it back weekend by weekend when you have to do the long runs. At first, it's every three weekends, and then it goes down to every two weekends. I believe that the Disneyland half is approximately around the 13-mile long training run weekend. But if it's not, let's just say that according to the schedule, this weekend you were supposed to do a 15 miler, and you only did say three or four, but you did run the Disneyland half. Then you could catch up with the schedule on the next long run by walking the first 5 or 6 miles, and then run, walk, run the rest of it. And should catch up with the schedule. If you're in doubt or having any trouble getting extra fatigue or anything, just simply walk the rest of the long run. And that's going to give you all the endurance, and it will really reduce the chance of having any adversity.
We have I love this because, Jeff, I'm sure you do too. This is a question for a brand new runner. Her name is Sarah Norris. And Sarah says, she said, I would love to hear Jeff's tips for newer runners training for their first nighttime race. I'm planning on running the Everest Challenge in May and typically run in the mornings. So, Jeff, here's an opportunity for you to give a first-time runner the most important things that they should know in preparing for their first nighttime race.
Well, Sarah, welcome to running. You have a whole lot of great experiences ahead. If you will just sort of look over the Run Disney website and JeffGalloway.com websites, we have tons of information that can help you through. Now, when it comes to a nighttime race, as I've been mentioning earlier in this podcast, the number one key element is having at least two runs that would start at about the time that you plan to start your Everest race, just so you get used to that whole syndrome of having lived throughout the day, and then at night you may be a little tired. Gearing your body up to run. But in addition, you really need to practice eating. And this is more important for beginning runners than it is for veterans. Because beginning runners, when they get to a big race that is so exciting like the Disney races are, they often lose it. And they eat things that they really shouldn't. And I'll tell you a reason why. I'm currently writing a book, Nutrition for Runners, and Nancy Clark is helping me with this book. The number one problem that people have when they approach a race, as I've identified through thousands of reports of gastro issues, is that people will actually tend to eat pretty well leading up to long runs, but they get their race weekend and they're nervous and feel the stress of the race building up, and so they lose it and start eating things that they would never eat normally. And a lot of these things are things that are hard to digest, or maybe eating too much of it, or eating too close to the start of the race, or all of the above. So get a plan, journal it, stick with it, and just don't eat stuff that could cause problems, and you'll be fine, and you'll really enjoy the event. I love the new Everest Challenge and look forward to it too. It's Disney really is doing a lot of neat things with their events.
It's interesting, Jeff, too, because when you're on vacation at Disney, where there's so many neat things to eat, it's a challenge, I think, sometimes for people to say, oh, I'm not going to have that gigantic ice cream, or I'm not going to have, you know, whatever it is that you're tempted to eat when you have the race coming up. So would you recommend they wait till after the race to indulge?
Well, I mean, if it's the day before the race, being an evening race, it's fine to indulge then. It's when it's race day that I really recommend sticking with a plan of eating that's worked for you before and avoiding foods that could possibly cause problems.
We have several questions that are very close, so we're going to combine them into three. They come from Kim Sharoff, Mitch Brannon, and our friend Chris Aliopoulos, Jeff, and I'll see if I can summarize what they're saying. Basically, they want to know how they should plan their day for a night race at Walt Disney World when you have the temptation of the Disney parks calling you. So they are looking for what would be your recommendation for how they should plan that day of the race.
Well, I'm all for people enjoying the parks. The issue is how long are you going to be on your feet, and how close to the event do you plan to do that? The other issue can be heat, because with Tower of Terror and Wine and Dine, it's sometimes very warm. And so if you're out there walking all day in the heat, it will take a lot out of you. Whereas if it's a cool day and you take the park in 2 to 2.5 hour segments and do a couple of those, maybe 3 hours each, two segments, there's usually not any major problem for most of the people that I've talked with. So anyway, it's really about you taking control over your destiny, planning in advance, and don't just go out there and say, well, I'll do what happens here. Put a limit on how long you're going to be on your feet, and then get back to your room in time enough so that you can rest, kick your feet up, and be relaxed, and then ready to go to that start. That is such an upbeat. Both of those events have such an upbeat staging area with the music and everything. And boy, even though it's an evening event, you're going to be jazzed when you get out there.
Would you give the same advice for experienced runners versus new runners? Or is that for everybody?
It's for everyone, although experienced runners that have gone through one of the Disney nighttime races before usually have figured out what works for them, and so they're able to then know what they should and shouldn't do. So my advice is just based on what has worked for the greatest number of people, and as all advice, you can really take it or leave it, but I have found that being more conservative allows for people to have a better experience afterwards.
Okay, thank you. So our friend Mitch Brannon actually has another question. He wants to know, how should you recover after a race if the inclination is to go to sleep? And I guess the assumption is that it would not be good to go to sleep right after the race.
Not necessarily. I mean, most of the people have just the opposite problem, and that is they're so jazzed after running the half marathon and finishing after midnight that they can't go to sleep and get little or no sleep that night. So anyway, if you can go to sleep, you know, you're really sleepy, and go for it, because then you'll wake up the next morning and you'll have time to go to the parks or relax, have a nice breakfast, and head home, or whatever it is that you need to do.
All right, Jeff. Liz Driscoll from Chicago, I believe, asks, how do you eat or drink after the 10K to best prepare for the half? And my guess is that she's talking about a 10K one day and then a half marathon the next day, like the Glass Slipper Challenge.
Or the Dumbo Double Dare. And
right.
I have not done any of these double races before, but I did out at Disneyland 2 weeks ago, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was just a great deal of fun. But there is an issue with reloading, and that is, and this is very well documented, in my book, Woman's Guide to Fat Burning, and then a new book that I'm working on now, Nutrition Guide for Runners, I've identified a lot of research showing that the best time to reload your energy stores, your glycogen stores in your muscles, is within 30 minutes of finishing. And it is best, if you can, to have, after a 10K, about 200 calories in the snack. It doesn't have to be much. But if you can get 80% of the calories in simple carbohydrate and 20% of the calories in protein, the research shows that you will tend to restock those glycogen stores most effectively. That said, there's a couple of products that actually have that 80-20 in the mix because they got a patent on it. They're put out by Pacific Health Labs. There's actually a Galloway discount on their website if you want to order it that way.
Woohoo! What's that?
Yeah.
I love that.
It's either Accelerade or Endurox R4. The Endurox R4 is a little more high-powered in terms of the recovery. But if you can't find the 20% protein, then it would be best just to go for the simple carbs, as in 200 calories, even from a soft drink or fruit juice, and just get it in there within 30 minutes. It's the 30-minute window that is very important.
What about chocolate milk?
Well, chocolate milk, if you look at non-fat chocolate milk, the contents, it seems to have approximately 80% simple carbs and 20% protein. But unfortunately, there are three strikes against it. The first one is curdling, which is a natural process of digestion. And I just looked up the research on it recently, about a week and a half ago. And what the research says is that it takes taking a glass of milk or chocolate milk, it takes about 40 minutes for the average person to digest it, which means that you're not going to get that 30-minute window. But there are two other strikes against chocolate milk. The second one is lactose intolerance, which slows down digestion even further. And a high percentage of the American population have some form of lactose intolerance. And third, the FDA allows dairy producers to put 0.5% of fat in non-fat products. And they all do it because it tastes better with that 0.5% of fat. Well, that slows down the digestion even further. So with chocolate milk, you're just not going to get the absorption done within 30 minutes. So it's best to go with something else.
Isn't that interesting? Oh, wow. Thank you. I'm glad I asked that. Okay. Sue Kissenweather has a question. We kind of touched upon this, but we should get Jeff's point of view because he's run these races too. Several people have suggested that I get a headlamp or carry a small flashlight on my race belt. Is there any part of the course for Tower of Terror or Wine and Dine that's really poorly lit? Is there anything that Jeff would suggest that you have for a night race that you usually wouldn't carry for a morning race?
That actually is an excellent suggestion. Whereas most of the two courses, because they are a little different and significantly different in some areas, but both of those courses have a few areas, very short areas, where it's dimly lit. And so it is always a great idea running in the dark to either carry a flashlight so that you can whip it out when those dark areas occur, or a headlamp. Now, that said, the flashlight tends to be a better thing to have, one of those little flashlights. A lot of them have great, great light to them, because the headlamp stuff, it's only directed at a certain place, and with other runners all around you, you may not be able to direct it where you want to and also look at the road and everything around you. So I really recommend a small flashlight that you could carry in your fanny pack or iFitness belt or, you know, something like that.
You know, I want to jump in too to say that having just run in the middle of the night this past weekend, I actually did use a headlamp and it kind of folded down so I could see the road in front of me. We were running in areas of New Hampshire where there was absolutely no extra light, just, you know, through the mountains. We saw cows, but that was about it. I saw people with this really interesting new type of lamp or light thing. It was LED lights that attach to the brim of your cap that you're wearing. Have you seen this? It kind of slips on and there are three or four bright lights on the top. It's very thin and just kind of slips right underneath your cap.
I've seen them. I haven't used them, so I can't give any observation on them. But, I'm all in favor of the individual controlling his or her destiny. And with the headlamps and a lot of people around you, you lose some of that control with a headlamp.
Right.
And I can understand why it would work on a road where nobody's in front of you. You don't have a lot of runners ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
And probably not much else, I guess, Michelle.
No, just road.
but when you have a lot of obstacles around you, either one, but I'd give the nod to a small flashlight with a good beam on it.
That's a great point. Thank you. All right, we just have two more questions for you, Jeff. These popped in just at the last minute, and they actually, neither one of them has to do with night races, but I know you're up for answering these questions.
And, sure am.
Justin LeBlanc wants to know, if you could just give a little quick overview of the Magic Mile. He wants to know just a little bit about, it says, not sure if the pace it gives you, I don't really understand the question. He wants an overview of the Magic Mile, please.
Sure, sure. I can do that. And I'll do it in a nutshell.
Okay.
But there's a whole lot of info in my Galloway Training Programs book and on the jeffgalloway.com website if you want to really access that and figure it out. But in a nutshell, Magic Mile is a time trial that can give you a very accurate prediction as to what you're currently capable of doing, what your potential is during the next 6 months. It's a one-mile time trial in which you time yourself, and you do it about every 2 to 3 weeks throughout the schedule leading up to a race. At first, you don't try to run it fast on the first one. You just get a time, and that time then becomes your target beat the next time, and then whatever your fastest time is, you try to beat that on each successive one. Most people that I have tracked have improved on practically every one of the Magic Miles, which means that you're predicting a faster finish time. And you'll see in the material, and there on jeffgalloway.com, there's actually a computation function. So you can plug in your Magic Mile time, and it'll tell you what's predicted in a 5K, 10K, half, or full marathon. Now, that said, in order to reach that potential, you have to have done all of the training that you'll see in my books, which means longer long runs than the distance of the race, and speed work, mile repeats for the marathon, and half-mile repetitions for the half marathon, and then other speed work for the other events. And then there's some other drills and things that you need to do too. But even if you don't do those, you would be able to see what an all-out performance would be, and then you make a judgment call as to how close you think you can come to what an all-out performance would be. Always better for first-timers to start out your key race, your goal race, at your training run pace, and then at about halfway to two-thirds the way through, if you're feeling good, you could start picking up the pace. But I wouldn't really go into a real speed-up mode until the last couple of miles of the race, because at that point, you should have a good feeling of what you can do, and you don't have an extremely long way to go, provided that you have run the distance of the race in your long run prior to the race.
Thank you. That's a timely question for me because I look ahead to the training program that you gave me, and I have a Magic Mile that I need to do next week. So
good.
That's good. Our last question I think is really interesting, and I'm looking forward to your answer. I think you've already sort of answered it talking about qualifying for Boston, but here's the question. Bob wants to know, looks like Bob Frayne wants to know, what does Jeff say to people who say that using the Galloway method, you're not really running a marathon or a half if you use that walk-run method?
Well, first of all, you're going to hear that among a few individuals. Most runners are very supportive of anyone that crosses the finish line. But there are a few people who believe that their way is the only way and that everybody else is wrong. I don't believe that myself. I think that in my 56 years of running, running has always been a free-form activity where people decide what they want to do. That's one of the most wonderful aspects about it. In terms of the marathon, where road racing started in 1896 in the Olympic Marathon, there was an article that was in a museum several years ago in Athens, Greece, that was written by a firsthand account of a reporter that followed all of the marathoners in that original marathon race. And his quote was that every one of those marathoners walked significant portions of that marathon. Walking was done from day one. It was, if all of us would run the way that this sport initiated, then all of us would be walking. But I don't dictate that to people. People can run continuously if they want. They can put a few walk breaks in. But anybody does get into an argument about that, the best way to diffuse it that I've found is to say, well, show me the rule book and I'll agree with you. Well, the beauty of running is there isn't any rule book. We go out there and run. We have fun. We are the captains of our ship. And so I salute anyone who crosses that finish line, regardless of whether they run continuously or put a lot of walk breaks, or even if they walk the whole way. I was in Washington, D.C. earlier this year giving a clinic for the Marine Corps Marathon, which I'm looking forward to running in a little over a month. And the race director of that race, Rick Nealis, a fabulous guy, was there. And somebody in the audience asked that same question, you know, are you really, a marathoner if you cross the finish line? And he said, well, that is the point. He says, we have one word for those who cross the finish line, whether they run the whole way, they race the whole way, they put walk breaks in. If they cross the finish line, they're a marathoner. And I salute everyone who crosses that finish line.
What a great last question. That was fantastic. Yeah. I have goosebumps. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Jeff, we can't thank you enough for helping us answer these questions. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are a little anxious about not just running their first Run Disney event, but their first nighttime Run Disney event. And we want to thank you for helping us answer these questions.
Well, you guys are doing a wonderful job, Michelle and Mike, for getting the information out there and supporting people along this journey and then having fun on race weekend. And boy, am I looking forward to that.
Thank you. We just hit, as you heard, over 100 episodes, and we thank you for all of your support because it's meant a whole lot to us and a lot of our listeners to comment on how much they enjoy hearing you on the show. So thank you for taking the time.
I'm there for you.
Thanks.
Two more things, Jeff. We met your lovely wife, Barbara, at the Disneyland Dumbo Dare weekend, and we saw her injury, and we wish her the best, and we want her to have a speedy recovery, and we want to see her back on the road. And number two, we want to wish you the best of luck this coming weekend, and we just know you're going to qualify, and we're going to be rooting for you.
Well, thank you so much. I will carry that with me and be thinking about that. I really appreciate your support.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. So for Jeff Galloway and for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we will all see you on the road.
This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who not only bring you this podcast, but also bring you the best in service when it comes to planning your vacation, be it a Disney vacation or any other vacation for that matter. They are experts in all things Disney and can help you answer questions and can do the best for your vacation dollar. So visit them at mei-travel.com, on mousefantravel.com, and if you didn't know it by now, you can also get to them by clicking on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at Facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at Twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.